Hello and welcome to the first Motorsport Magazine issue.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
To podcast of 2019. I'm Joe Dunn, and I'm joined today by our star photographer, Lyndon McNeil.
Hello.
Simon Aaron, our features editor.
Good afternoon.
And our art director, Damon Cogman.
Hello.
Now, for new listeners, this is where we run through the new issue of the magazine, which is on sale right now, and try and give an insight into the stories behind the stories. The issue we're talking about, of course, is the February issue with Mike Hawthorne, resplendent upon the cover line, golden boy, beautiful photograph, Lyndon. I mean, it's classic motorsport, a classic motorsport image, isn't it?
It sums us up, yeah. It's one of our, it's a beautiful portrait from the LAT archives that we hope is fairly, a fairly unseen photo, this one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it wasn't. We had two choices. Actually, we should talk about this because we had two choices, didn't we? We had, in fact, Damon had a superb idea about representing Mike Hawthorne with a lovely image of his famous polka dot bow tie, which you shot, didn't you? And we had it. Well, talk us through. Tell us what we had.
Well, we were given by Nigel Webb, the man behind the Mike Hawthorne Museum. It wasn't an original bow tie because that's encased in glass and hidden away for no one to touch. But he gave us a bow tie, which was a replica of, and we studio shot it to give it that feel.
Studio in the loosest sense, really, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, we're not going to hire a studio just for a bow tie. No. But
tell the truth, where did you shoot it?
I shot it in my kitchen. There we go. But it gave us the option to either go wildly abstract and go for a bow tie to simulate the Hawthorne trademark, shall we say, or do we go for a portrait? But
it's one of those things where if you think of Mike Hawthorne, one of the first things that comes to mind is the bow tie. So we rather controversially tried it out on the cover first, didn't we?
We did. Well, I didn't see that. I didn't see that issue. I managed to take a couple of weeks' holiday. But
yes, Joe and I was working. We were working on the cover, potentially with a bow tie, but we just in the end it was maybe a little bit too
one step
too
beyond
much of an abstract concept. but in the end, we came up with a rather amazing looking black and white traditional amazing shot of him smiling away, happy as Larry. Heartland Motorsport. This,
and I think the final choice for the cover image is every bit as much Mike Hawthorne as the bow tie on its own. I mean, it's a lovely, lovely portrait.
Yeah, it's really it's quite poignant as well, isn't it? I mean, I should say that this is the anniversary special. Of course, Mike died 1959 in January, so this is really the issue dedicated to him and his memory. I mean, it's an issue that's packed full of fantastic stories. I'm gonna kind of run through the first part, but I'm going to pause briefly on Simon, your column, because again, that's quite a poignant column. It was a bit of a last. You made a bit of a habit of visiting racetracks and just on the eve of their demise.
Well, Lyndon and I were both sort of there when Wimbledon Stadium closed, but Rockingham, it was ever since. I mean, this is the last example of my club racing column in its current form, and I'd always meant to get to Rockingham because I'd not been there many times during its 18-year history, and I kept not quite getting there for one reason or another, and then they announced it was closing, and late November I went along and got a big turnout. It was quite a funny day, really. There was a deer, and everyone associates Corby with being an industrial wasteland. There was a deer in the car park. I mean, there are deer warning signs at Rockingham, but even so, to hear that one of my colleagues had seen one was quite surprising. But it was one of those days when you just really, I mean, they had good grids of cars, lots of people, lots of people I knew from the very early days of Rockingham when I did go to a couple of meetings, and it all turned out just to say a fond farewell, really. Never had the cachet or romance of a UK circuit, like Brands Hatch has, for example. It's the UK's newest circuit as well, it was, having only opened in 2001. But it was a venue that, given the amount of motor racing in Britain, there are 240-odd championships, you know, we need a broad number of circuits to accommodate all of them, particularly with expanding stuff like low-cost endurance racing. And Rockingham, being in the middle of an industrial estate, could host as many 24-hour races as it wanted, more or less. So it's lost. It wasn't physically beautiful. It didn't have the elegance of Cadwell Park, Alton Park, Brands Hatch, etc. But it was a vital cog for grassroots motorsport in the UK, as well as a host for the British Touring Car Championship, British GT. So, you know, I'm sad to see it go.
What do you think kind of went wrong, or where did it go wrong?
I spoke to one of the management team who drove a Citroën C1 at the last race meeting, and he said very, very simply that motorsport wasn't viable. The land has got more value in the long term as a commercial site. It's going to be used as an automotive storage hub, and I think in time it'll be developed either as...
Well, that particular area is being redeveloped around Corbion, and it's being
gentrified.
Gentrified at a rate of knots at the moment, so it's a huge plot.
It will become housing, I'm sure, at some stage.
Sure.
But, I mean, people say motor racing is not viable, but you look at MSB, for example, and they've got a portfolio of 5 circuits with another one to open in France very soon. They're busy, you know, 7 days a week, some of them. 10 or 11 months of the year.
I think that's with where a corporate model. Yeah, that's where Rockingham kind of failed a little bit, wasn't it, in the corporate, because it was never as glamorous, and the corporate guests that they needed to function over a 7 day a week kind of option were never turned on to the fact that they were out in the middle of Corby or near Corby.
Well, no, I think exactly. It didn't have the cachet to bring in that kind of. I mean, it had some of that business.
Sure, sure.
But, you know, all of the MSV tracks have got a certain reputation.
And trees.
And trees, and Corby, apart from the one deer that I was told about, is largely concrete. But as I say, it's to lose any motorsport venue, no matter how beautiful it might or might not be, is a great pity.
Absolutely. Well, I think we all agree with that. We've got quite a lot to get through, so I'm going to skip through a few pages here through our events page. Tomorrow's World, interesting story here actually from Samarth, who looks into esports and the human cost of esports. And this is the idea that competitors can get psychologically or mentally. Or it can be psychologically, mentally harmful to them if they are sort of playing these games 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it's not your standard motorsport injury, but it's something that it looks like the organisers are taking quite seriously. So, Martha, you went to Monaco to do this, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm here now. Sorry, I just ran from the other side of the street.
Samarth just run over to talk about
just
this story.
From the other side of the room.
Yes, the human cost of esports. I thought it was an interesting angle because no one says the A word, in this case, addiction. The FIA, though, seemed pretty open to making changes. So, you know, they're acknowledging it. The competitors are not. I mean, spending 16 hours a day cannot be healthy on Gran Turismo or any of these simulators. However, the event itself took me aback. I was.
What event was it?
Well, it was the Gran Turismo. It's a very long name. Gran Turismo Championships World Finals, something something. There we go. No, yeah, let's just call it the Gran Turismo Championships World Finals in Monaco, and it was glitzy. It was everything you'd expect from top tier motorsport, but virtual. And I was blown away by the presentation, the fanfare of it all, and the broadcast. And I have to admit that I was absorbed in the competition. I genuinely thought it was gripping stuff.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's an element of motorsport, or an area of motorsport that's not going to go away. But I know that a lot of traditional readers and listeners will be probably raising an eyebrow at it, and the idea of kind of burnout from playing too many computer games to many will be sort of the kind of polar opposite, really, of what motorsport's supposed to be about. But But that said, as you say, it's an interesting area. You were came back a convert.
Yeah, and like it or not, it is here to stay. So, I mean, I didn't think I'd like it. There we go.
Were you mentally exhausted when you got back?
No, I was actually fine. Monaco's quite a nice place.
You're made of sterner stuff, Samar. So we've got Mark Hughes, columnist. Matt Oxley's done a fantastic column. So is Doug Nye. Doug Nye's strayed into modern tech for his column this month, looking at Lewis's World Championship winning car. We go to letters. We're getting great letters at the moment. So if you're listening and you read something in the magazine that kind of inspires a letter, please do email us, write to us. We love hearing from you. And then we get to our cover story, which is the Mike Hawthorn feature entitled "Mike Hawthorn, Britain's Forgotten World Champion." A slightly provocative kind of cover line, really. And already we've had people saying, "What do you mean forgotten? You know, we remember him, you know, like it was yesterday." And I can take that point. But I think our sort of premise was that he's just not remembered in the same way as a Clark or a Moss. And yet he was Britain's first world champion. And the stats don't necessarily stack up. But we kind of challenged Paul Fearnley to sort of explain, really, why he deserves his place in the pantheon. And Simon, I mean, he does that looking at individual races. I mean, what's your kind of feeling on Hawthorn? He's, divisive is too strong a word, but I mean...
Yeah, he's... it's not so much divisive. It's more... either you are completely enamoured by the sport, as we all are, and therefore, when you were a kid, you read about... I mean, I read about him in books when I was 7 or 8 years old, and I grew up with boxer dogs. He had a boxer dog, so I thought, what's the connection? And yeah, there were some fantastic performances. I mean, you look at some of his race performances during the 50s. There were 53 French Grand Prix. They were wonderful. But I think the thing that people tend to be a little bit sniffy about is the fact that in the final tally, he only won 3 World Championship qualifying Grand Prix. In the year he won the title, he won 1 race. Tony Brooks won 3. Sterling Moss won 4. But the Van Wall wasn't as reliable as the Ferrari, and Hawthorn's greater consistency in the end, or the greater consistency plus Sterling Moss talking to the stewards of the Portuguese Grand Prix and persuading them to reinstate Hawthorn after a push down an escape road. The people tend to think, well, you know, it was like a Keke Rosberg World Championship when other drivers won more races. But the fact is, he did it. And you look at his peaks, some of which Paul explains brilliantly, were very, very, very high. He wasn't as consistently quick as a Moss, but he was still a brilliant racer.
But to be fair, he came and he sort of did what he wanted to do. And obviously with the loss of his friend, and he kind of chose, he was already chosen at the end of his championship winning year to retire. So he was only ever going to be that around for that period of time. So most of the kind of legends kind of tend to go on for a lot longer and tend to kind of have their peaks and their troughs, but they tend to have them over a greater period of time. He was never going to be one of the ones that was going to be in the same rank as the Clarks and the Mosses, etc. But there's no reason why we don't think of one time world champions in a way that we kind of remember fondly, or in a way that we did with Keke, and indeed Nico, of course. Came along, got his 1 world championship, went, right, thank you very much, and then off he went, much in the same way as Mike.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I think that, you know, as I say, you look at his peaks, and his highs were very, very, very high. I think the people, he's clearly not forgotten by the vast majority of motorsport readers, but if any of us were to walk out down Finchley High Road this afternoon and say, right, who is Mike Hawthorn, the chances of finding any passerby who'd got a clue would be very, very slim. Whereas they'll know Sterling Moss.
I think Mike when he died, he had that second career to come, and he would have had a career as an after dinner speaker, you know, an incredible character as he was. I know he had his illnesses, etc., but you know, who's to say what he wouldn't have continued in the public eye for a while.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
One of the great things about this feature, I think, is the pictures. And I know, Lyndon, you went to... Because we were keen, obviously, to show a side to this story that hadn't been seen before. And you went to LAT and they... Well, you tell us.
Well, their archivist trawled through their folders and drawers of many photos and came out with a lot of unseen or the rarer images that haven't been seen as often as everything else. You know, there's the typical Hawthorne in his D-type, but Le Mans in 55 and everything else that people recognise. But we wanted to go deeper, and because we're showing him in a different light and it's about which Paul, the stories that Paul picked out, we wanted to depict those stories as well and our own opinions and how we feel. So, yeah, the pictures we found were... It's always hard to find more or the diverse images from an era where, you know, somebody took two rolls of film to a Grand Prix and try and get as much as we can. But we've been very lucky with the supply that LAT found for us.
Well, I think they're absolutely stunning and really kind of do justice to Paul's words. And part of the another additional part of the package here of Hawthorne is a really nice feature which looks at Mike Hawthorne's little known museum, which is owned and curated by Nigel Webb, who's a sports fan and a Hawthorne fan, and has many over the years collected many of Hawthorne's cars and parts of his estate, and Rob Ladbrook, who's not here today. He's feeling unwell, which is unlike Rob. He's usually works like a Trojan, doesn't he? Went down to visit him, and he's done a lovely piece. And actually, a lot of this museum displays are going to be on display at Race Retro, which is powered by Motorsport magazine. And Race Retro takes place on February the 22nd until February the 24th at Stoneleigh Park in Coventry. So if you haven't got tickets, please go and get tickets. That's my plug for our event. Well, I tell you, I mean, it's great. You know, the actual museum, the context of the museum hasn't been seen by many people because it's a private collection. It's a private museum, and we call it a museum, but it's not open to the public. It's kind of by invite only. So this is something of a world first. This is be the first time that the museum exhibits are going to be open to the public at Race Retro. So if you're a Mike Hawthorne fan, get down to Stoneleigh Park in Coventry and have a look at Nigel Webb's stunning collection. We hope to get him up on stage as well, where we'll talk to him about how he's come by a lot of this content. Doug Nye as well has written a fantastic personal piece on his memories of Mike, because Doug grew up in Surrey and remembers Mike, remembers actually being, well, he thinks he may have been pushed off the road by Mike. He tore past him like Toad of Toad Hall. But it's a lovely kind of personal piece. And then on to the next feature, which is W Series, which is a piece on the all-female racing series. Again, like eSports, something which might divide opinion. We've interviewed Catherine Bond-Muir, who is the chief executive behind the new racing series, and asked her to explain a little bit about the business model behind it and why she wants to do it. And Simon, she comes across pretty... she's an impressive woman. I mean, I met her and spoke to her, but she seems to know what she's talking about as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you conducted the interview. I've not had the chance to meet her yet. I have spoken to the commercial team at the W Series, led by Matt Bishop, formerly with McLaren. And, people do have mixed feelings about what the W Series is, what it represents, whether it's the right thing in a business that theoretically should provide equal opportunities for both genders, but the current model clearly doesn't produce a balanced field.
I think that's the critical thing to remember, isn't it?
The current model doesn't do it.
Exactly. So, yeah. It doesn't work at the moment, and this is a way.
Well, it might be a way.
Yes, it's another path. And if it ends up being an amazing success, we'll all sit here in a few years' time and go, brilliant, that was the... If it doesn't, then that's fine. But let's give it a try. Yeah.
And, I mean, I think Catherine's answers to your questions, Joe, were very plausible. They come across as they make a lot of sense. And I think the people with the W Series are also very, you know, they admit they don't know whether this is going to work, but they're prepared to give it a go. I mean, my one... Looking at the female racers who've been chosen, some of them I don't know much about. They've come from
all four corners of the world.
Well, they've come from absolutely. The world's square, is it? I don't
know. I think you'll find it's flat.
Norfolk, he's more or less Norfolk, which is flat. But there are some I don't know about. There are some who are there who, to be fair, have had a crack before in Formula Renault GP3 and stuff. And
you could say that about male drivers. There's so many male drivers around that you don't have any clue about and just appear in the scene because they've got some cash behind them. So I think the fact that you don't know half these drivers...
No, but they're the ones I'm interested in. Because there are a few too many for my liking who've had proper opportunities in GP3, Formula Renault, whatever, have not been good enough. I'm sorry, but they haven't. I want to see the young ones who I don't know about who might be good enough. They're the ones I'm interested in seeing.
Okay, well, I think we're all looking forward to it. We're all excited for it because we kind of, you know, in this world of Me Too and all that, we're all on board. We all want it to happen.
The thing I like is it's actually generating conversations about motor. It's bringing motor racing into the public eye in a slightly different way. And there's a race at Brands Hatch later this year, which I'm going to go and watch because I'm just interested to see how the thing will evolve.
I completely agree, and I think anything that sparks a debate and gets people involved has got to be a good thing. We are motoring through the issue. We've got a great piece about obviously Paris-Dakar is underway now in South America. We've got a great piece on a Rolls-Royce Corniche which took part.
So being motorsport, what we've done is we've chosen a 1981 Rolls-Royce Corniche.
Well, we couldn't do the obvious.
Moving with the times.
But that is no dafter than holding the Dakar Rally in South America, is it?
That's fair point, and then because this is our sort of end of year issue as well, we've got our 2018 in pictures. Lyndon, Damon, I mean... Probably this is your favourite part of the year, isn't it?
We just go through every website we can find and find every source and look what's prettiest and choose a couple of my own maybe. but it's just nice to actually look back through the year and realise what you might have missed or hasn't been seen. It's just a lovely retrospective.
I can see a whole book coming. Yeah, for this. I'd be quite happy to just look at amazing pictures.
Well, I mean, it's one of the things, isn't it? I mean, this, in a way, this sort of encapsulates what we do. I mean, it's sometimes a problem, isn't it? The breadth of disciplines that motorsport covers. I mean, we don't just do Formula One. We don't just do historic racing. We do everything, and these pictures really show that. We've got endurance racing. We've got NASCAR, F1,
Brazilian stock cars,
MotoGP, touring cars, everything and anything.
Those pictures of I think it's a really nice selection. I think you've done really well on that one.
Yeah.
We've got a feature on an E-Type being reunited with its owner, an E-Type which may or may not have appeared in the film The Italian Job. We'll leave you to decipher whether it actually appeared in the film or not. And Mark Hughes has interviewed Christian Horner. A really interesting interview, and really interesting to hear from Horner. I mean, Simon, they've got to be in the running for next year, haven't they?
Well, there is an elephant in the room or in the back of the car. We don't yet. Obviously,
I
do mean a Honda. Yeah, I do.
New engine, new car.
I personally was obviously I'm not in the Formula One paddock. In the way I used to be, but I personally, watching from afar and chatting to Mark and one or two other people who are still involved, you know, I was impressed overall with what Honda did in 2018. The fact that in the second race of the season they finished fourth, a better result than McLaren had achieved in the previous three seasons with the same, you know, partnership.
There's a whole other podcast, isn't it?
Well, there is a whole other podcast.
What McLaren did wrong this year.
But if you use the technical prowess of Red Bull and the financial resources of Honda, given what Red Bull have done as a Renault customer team, I think potentially if Honda can nail the reliability, we don't know that yet, but they've made impressive gains over the last 12, 15 months. And if they can nail it, I'm not going to say they're going to be a contender next year, but as a potential challenger for race victories, certainly, yeah.
I think I'd be surprised if they didn't win a race. I mean, on your previous point, Horner is very mischievously says, doesn't he, about McLaren, that he said that, you know, they in 2017 they always said they had the best chassis and were just being held back by the engine. And then he was on say, so it was very unfortunate. That just when they changed the engine, they went from having the best chassis to not the best.
Christian is actually, he's very, very good at whenever there's a sort of there's a slightly open goal, he's always very good at burying the ball in the back of the net. I like the way he does it, to be honest, because I like a bit of mischief.
One of the interesting things that I found when I came to design this was that when we were looking for photos for this, we were trying to find pictures of Daniel and of Max together. And every single one of them, they're smiling, they're happy. I know that Daniel kind of came to the end of his Red Bull career under a small amount of annoyance and etc. But what I thought was really interesting was I couldn't find a picture of the two of them where they looked unhappy together at any point.
I don't think there's any picture of Danny without a smile, though, is there? Regardless,
it proves
what a good team that they've got behind them and they're involved in to always be happy, regardless of whether Danny's. Yeah. Reliability problems of failing.
Obviously, we know that Max is quite a volatile character, and obviously Daniel being the supposed team leader. It's interesting, the dynamic.
Is it just that the Red Bull archive doesn't have any photographs? Of
no, it's just everywhere.
They just enjoyed their own. The two of them enjoyed their company, each other's company.
I think it's a point. Well, I mean, I've seen a couple of times this year when one of the TV stations had them doing silly things. And they both get, I mean, it becomes very competitive between them. They were throwing an axe at a target board at one race, and, you know, Ricciardo was very good at it, and Max couldn't do it quite as well. But it was very, but there was a really nice rapport between them.
Yeah.
And Christian makes the point in the interview that managing the two of them, despite Baku, despite everything else last year, has been a whole lot easier than managing Sebastian Vettel and Mark Webber.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, one of the things that I thought was quite amusing for me was that in the piece, Christian says that he heard Ricciardo call him to tell him that he was leaving after Ricciardo had just landed at LA, and it reminded me of an interview with Danny that Mark had done a couple of months ago, where Danny had explained that he'd made the decision on the flight from, I think it was from London to LA mid-air, and so it kind of tied the two up quite nicely. Now, all of this is really serves as a preamble.
Do we really have to do this? I'm so sorry, everybody.
I think the next feature is probably the best feature that I've never had to shoot.
Well, to coin a phrase, you would say that, wouldn't you? This is our feature that shows our star photographer, Lyndon McNeil, and documents his journey to becoming through his midlife crisis to becoming a fully fledged racing driver. Go on, Lyndon, the floor is yours.
Oh, well, you'll all read about it. You've probably seen the videos.
I hope you've seen the videos.
Simon was there to watch. I had Damon to watch. Last year I was very lucky to be given the opportunity by Radical to take my ARDS, do a test, and then stupidly they put me in a race as well at the end of the season. And other than being the happiest man alive for being able to do it, for wanting to have raced for pretty much all my life, it was fantastic. I can't thank Radical anymore, I think, because they would probably just get sick of it.
You can just start sounding like an IndyCar driver.
I know, all sponsors. Thank my sponsors and everybody else. But to be thrown in at the deep end, I did my ARDS. They gave me a test there at Donington. another test day at Brands Hatch, and then the race was the very next day. And to be on the grid, to even just be to qualify for me was a massive achievement. And
your dad was quite
my
happy
dad,
as well,
yeah. Well, to see my dad cry is always a that's a stony hard man. It was just.
Was he crying because you were in the top 10 or because you weren't in the top 3?
I think because I was in the top 10. It was just for me. It was a perfect end to a lovely year. So, yeah,
and I have to say, as an eyewitness and having raced myself back in the day, and I know how difficult it is, it doesn't look as difficult from the spectator bank at Paddock Hill Bend as it looks behind the wheel.
Obviously, I've always stood.
You did bloody well, mate.
Thank you. But I've always stood on one side of the fence and seen cars coming one way, knowing where they should be. But when you're in the car, trying to place that car to be where you think it should be for the photo, it's a whole new world, and it's opened my eyes up, and I want to do it again.
Blatant plug. Please give me a race seat.
And clearly, you've got spare mental capacity, because you told me at one point that when you're coming to the hill towards Druids, you could see me trackside taking
photos. I was looking out for everybody. I think I probably had the best documented debut race. I had so many photographers there with their snipers. Sniper trained. Yeah.
Slide up,
I did pick some spots on a previous test, thinking that's where I'm going to end up in the gravel. But no, just a couple of spins. But
And you almost took the championship leader off on the last lap. That was hilarious, but you didn't.
Well, it's a really good read, actually. And as you said, there's some great video as well on our website, where you can follow in diary form Lyndon's journey from photographer to
fully fledged racer.
There we go. What else have we got? We've got some great. Andrew Frankel's done some great road cars for us, including the new Mazda MX-5, which I think is everyone's favourite little roadster. We have Speed Shop. We're documenting some great restorations. We've got auctions where Max Girardo talks about his or the most expensive auction lots this year. But I want to finish on lunch. Our lunch with interview, which this month is with Dick Bennett. Simon, I mean, it's a great interview and a really interesting man as well.
Yeah, we're basically moving from Lyndon McNeil to Ayrton Senna, aren't we?
It's not that big a jump, surely.
Norfolk boys.
I mean, it was a pleasure to do the interview. I've known Dick for a very long time, since 82 probably, when he was in the early days of his British Formula 3 team. And he's an interesting character because he's worked at higher levels and worked very briefly with McLaren in the early days of the Ron Dennis era. But he didn't want to work in Formula One. He didn't want to be just a number in a big team. He preferred doing his own thing. A very practical man. And he's had a huge amount of success running guys like Senna, Hakkinen, and Rubens Barrichello in Formula 3. And in more recent years, the British Touring Car Championship, he won all three titles this year with Colin Turkington and BMW. And he's just a very, very easy guy to rub along. Like most Kiwis, very down to earth, very practical, no nonsense, ask a question, get a straight answer. And yeah, I think a lunch went on for about 3 hours in the end, which was a bloody long time to transcribe, Dick, thanks. But I enjoyed every second of it.
It was quite a challenge to reduce the amount of sort of highlights of his career, because he's been doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Such a long time, and I say not so many different things, but with different. It's been sort of Formula 3, Formula 2, Formula Atlantic, but with so many different interesting people: Keke Rosberg, yeah. Bobby Rahal. You know, he's worked with a hell of a lot of interesting people. I think he's in the market for Lyndon McNeil when Turkington retires.
I'll keep my eyes open, ears peeled. But it was also when we were going through the archive for the career in pictures at the bottom, just the variety, like you say, of who he's worked with. You're like, oh my God, I didn't realise he did this and did that. And
he's still
doing it, yeah. Today, still champion,
so
yeah.
He's been winning for, 40 years or whatever it is. So, hats off.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to say thanks to him as well, because a lot of the photographs.
A lot of the archive that we'd never have found.
I just said to him when I was talking to Dick on the phone before we had lunch, I said, look, if you've got anything from any snapshot from your family catalogue that we could possibly use, and he just turned up at the pub with a pile and said, take your pick, and which was great.
Perfect, it made our life a lot easier.
Yes, saved a few blank spaces, so thank you, Dick.
Thanks, Simon. I mean, I agree. I think it's a vintage lunch. It really is. And as you say, Lyndon, what's great about it is that, and what the great lunches should do in a way is just reveal new aspects that you just didn't know. And
it opens your eyes. You see this guy. I knew he ran Formula 3. You know, I knew he ran Hakkinen in F3, and obviously Senna with Formula 3. But then it's everything else I didn't realise, and it taught me a thing or two.
No, I mean, even though I knew he'd been with Ron Dennis's Project 4 around the Pro Car time, I didn't realise he'd engineered Niki Lauda in the Pro Car Championship. Yeah. That I didn't know. So, as well as a new Dick, that had never come up in conversation before.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that brings us to the end of this month's issue podcast. Sam, who is in charge of the sort of mixing decks, is signalling to me that our time is up. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoy the magazine. If you haven't bought the magazine yet, please go and buy it. In all newsagents now, as we said right at the beginning, it's the magazine with the picture of Mike Hawthorn on the cover and our famous green masthead across the top. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time for the March issue podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.